This is the only live and local morning show in the area. Interesting news, engaging talk, and news that affects you. This is the KUMA Coffee Hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Well, it's Tuesday, the 24th of January, and joining me in the studio this morning is Intermountain ESD Superintendent Mark Mulvihill. Lots to talk about this morning, always a fun conversation, and we're going to get that all started right after these words.
It might be a little tricky to fly in and out of Walla Walla right now with the Alaska Air flight schedule change, but if you like to sleep in and have a relaxing morning before your flight, you will love the midday flight time. You will still have good flight connections at SeaTac for wherever your journey takes you. So, purchase your ticket today at alaskaair.com, pack your bags, and enjoy your flight from the Walla Walla Regional Airport. Need a little more incentive? Free parking. Fly Walla Walla.
Let's get back to the area's only live and local morning show, the KUMA Coffee Hour, on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Thanks for joining us on a Tuesday. This is the KUMA Coffee Hour. Dan Chesman, your host. Joining me this morning is Mark Mulvihill, Superintendent of the Intermountain ESD. Mark, good morning.
Morning, Dan. Great to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming in this morning. Lots to talk about, as always, starting with the actual figures for each school district are coming out Thursday morning from the Oregon Department of Education. What are you hoping, expecting the statistics to show?
Yeah, this is really our most important indicator that comes out this time of year. It's the graduation rates. So it's the four-year graduation rate, five-year completer, and what that means is tracking how many of our kids that start their freshman year finish as a senior with a full 24-credit diploma in Oregon, which is a very rigorous diploma. So, you know, we have several indicators that we monitor for, you know, success in schools. Everything from a kindergarten assessment, we actually have that now, how kids are prepared. Third grade reading is a really fundamental benchmark. Ninth grade on track, whether they're on track to graduate, that's another one. But the biggie is the four-year grad rate. So that's coming out here. It's been embargoed. The information actually comes out on Thursday, I believe, statewide. So your question was, what am I hoping for? I'm hoping that they're good. My expectations, I really don't know, because we are still recovering from a pandemic. So, you know, we've been on this show a lot talking about COVID and those rough times when we had school closures. You know, Oregon was a state, and the, you know, whether we agree politically or not, everybody has a view on this. We were a state that closed down quite a bit. And so we were out of school quite a bit compared to some other areas. In Eastern Oregon, some of our schools, and if you remember back in the day, there were metrics on how counties were doing, were in school. But it was really, really unsettling for the kids, the families, and the staff. And we're seeing we're seeing pretty significant declines in academics, particularly our kids that are traditionally underserved. You know, our kids of poverty, disabilities, students of color have really, you know, that we're struggling, seeing on where that's going to go. This is really a barometer, I guess, on Thursday of post-COVID. I hope the grad rates are up. I think some of our districts that were in school quite a bit, you know, Union County, some of the smaller ones should be just fine. But I think Umatilla County, which was shut down for quite a while, we're going to see some of that impact. And we're seeing some changes, Dan, in the system. You know, we lost kids during COVID out of the Oregon system. So Oregon, you know, is around 550, fluctuates 550, 580,000 kids-ish. We're down 35,000 kids in Oregon. So our enrollment, and there's a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of reasons from economic to housing to an aging state, a changing demographic of how many kids families have. There's a lot of influences going on, but the reality is we're down kids. So it's going to be what I consider a baseline grad rate. Okay, this is our baseline after COVID and all of this change, the loss of kids. Where are we in Oregon right now? Where are we in individual districts are going to come out here Thursday. Now, remember, before the pandemic, we had the highest graduation rates we've ever had in Oregon. We were 84%, and our region was leading the way. You know, back in the day of World War II, grad rates were around 40-50%. So we've taken this very seriously, and our graduation rates have come up, and districts have worked really, really hard on it. So we had a lot of momentum going before the pandemic. Then it hit, and now we're seeing, okay, what is the new bar? Where are we? Where do our kids sit? That's what we're going to find out on Thursday. I'm hoping they're good. I think we will see a scattergram, if you will, of some districts that were in school, did well. Umatilla County, our larger ones, I don't know. I don't know how Pendleton's going to come out, Hermiston, Umatilla, Milton, Freewater. We'll see. You know, I'm hopeful, but it could be whatever comes out, that's where we are. And that's where the barometer is, and we got a lot of work to do.
And what has to happen for schools to recover from the pandemic?
Well, you know, I get that question asked a lot, Dan, and to me, it's about time. So you've heard me on the show push back quite a bit on some of the narratives going on about Oregon schools. You know, our graduation rates are poor, and now our reading scores are poor, and this and that. And it's really used as a political football, and it's actually pretty damaging for the people who are trying, who are doing the work every day, and the kids in school. It's not accurate. It's how we measure compared to other states. I'll leave it at that. But one indicator that is what it is, that is a problem in Oregon, is the length of our school year. So, you know, this statistic to me is pretty alarming. If a student goes to school in Washington, kindergarten through 12th grade, 13 years, and the same student goes to school in Oregon, K through 12, 13 years, the student in Washington will have gone a year more in school. That's because they've got a longer year, and you add that up cumulatively over 13 years, that's what happens. So Oregon, I believe, we need to confront time. We need to confront some of our cultural expectations and things that we have, and look at academic performance and say, are our kids in school enough? Certainly with the pandemic, the answer to recovery, where your question was on loss, what are we going to do about this? We need kids in school more. So how are we going to ramp up before school programs, after school programs, summer school programs? How are we going to look at lengthening our school year? Not as a punishment. I mean, if you have like summer school, it doesn't mean it has to be sitting there with a worksheet and pounding out things. It can be activities and field trips and other types of enrichment things that help student learning as well. So that's my answer, Dan, when people ask, what are we going to do about it? I can't see staff working harder. I can't see parents working harder. What I see is we need more time in school. We need kids in front of quality teachers longer in Oregon. That's what we need to do.
Mark, is there a lost group that has aged out or graduated out of the public school system? And can anything be done for them?
I don't know if there's or not. You know, this Thursday is going to be an indicator of that, Dan. This is what happened during the pandemic as well. It was coupled with all the stimulus money and a lot of job availability and increase of minimum wages. So we lost kids partly because they could enter the workforce immediately, and there were opportunities for that. So again, there's so many factors involved here, but you know, in talking to some of the superintendents, some of the seniors we quote lost that you're referring to went into the workforce and have disappeared. And so some of them gone to online. We really need to take a study on where are those 35,000 kids and what are the reasons and what has happened. And it's going to take a few years to sort this all out.
All right. Talking this morning with Mark Mulvihill, Superintendent, Intermountain ESD. Back with more after these words.
It's that time of year again, and we're here to make sure you are winter ready. Hi, Scott here with Pendleton Tire and Auto, your hometown headquarters for winter driving. Nelke and Mitchell and BF Goodrich, Falkland and Hankook, we have your winter tire needs covered. Our shop is ready to ensure your vehicle is ready for the snow and freezing temperatures. Batteries, brakes, heating, wipers, shocks, and charging systems. Stop by for a free inspection, and we'll be sure you're safe out there on the winter roads. Please always be sure your windows are free of ice and snow. Slow down and arrive safe. Pendleton Tire and Auto, Eastgate Pendleton, 276-276. 7774.
Heaters, gloves, shovels, ice melt, sleds, you need it, Zimmerman & Company True Value has it. Here's Jeff to tell you more.
We have a large variety of Easy Heat roof eave heaters. We carry ice melt. We carry a large variety of snow shovels. We have winter gloves, plenty of pipe insulation. We have numerous types of weather stripping. And for the kids, we have a wide variety of sleds of all shapes and sizes.
Open 7 days a week, Zimmerman & Company True Value, a mainstay on Main Street for over 80 years in downtown Pendleton.
Winter weather and extreme cold can mean problems for your pipes. When daytime temperatures are 32 degrees or lower, leave cold water slowly dripping from a faucet to keep water moving. If a sink is against an outside wall, insulate the wall and open cabinets to let warm air reach the pipes. Outside your home, clear out and shut down underground sprinklers, cover faucets, and disconnect hoses. Be proactive and prevent the misery and expense of frozen water pipes. This message from the City of Pendleton.
Heritage Station Museum is closed for the season, but you can still support the Umatilla County Historical Society in many ways. Shop at the Community Thrift Shop on Court Street, where all proceeds benefit UCHS. Or visit heritagestationmuseum.org, and you can become a member, even make a donation right through the website. Follow Heritage Station Museum on Facebook and Instagram for the spring opening date and for upcoming events. Heritage Station Museum, telling the story.
Join Team Wild. Every Wednesday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Wild Horse Resort and Casino will have a walk-in hiring event. Come meet their friendly team members for on-the-spot interviews. Wild Horse Resort and Casino has more benefits, including group health, vision and dental, 10 paid holidays, paid birthday leave, paid vacation, employer 401k match, education reimbursement, free meal on shift, and employee discounts. Working at Wild Horse is more rewarding, so come visit Human Resources on Wednesday for on-the-spot interviews and job offers. Wild Horse Resort and Casino, Pendleton.
Let's get back to more live and local news from the KUMA Coffee Hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Back this morning with Mark Boldehill, Intermountain ESD Superintendent. And Mark, nominations are open through the end of February for the Intermountain ESD Teacher of the Year. Can anyone nominate a teacher?
Yes. There's the answer. So we have two really cool awards, I think, for our staff that the public can be a part of and give nominations or recommendations or be part of the process. One is the Oregon Teacher of the Year, the one you're referring to. And again, this is all on the Intermountain website. We coordinate this for the Department of Education. So we take nominees from our regional schools, our 21 regional schools, and we have a panel of administrators and teachers that select the final winner. And we always have anywhere from 15 to around 15, 20. Maybe I'm a little off, but we get a lot of nominations. And the panel goes through and we select one. And we also always recognize with a letter anybody who's been nominated. Then whoever comes from our Eastern Oregon region that is selected goes on and competes at the statewide level. A couple years ago, we had a teacher from Baker that won, so it isn't always just the Valley. So I encourage that. The other one that we have on a regional level as well is the Crystal Apple, and that's for any employee, and that'll come up a little later in the spring. So we try, awards are interesting, Dan. You know, they mean a great deal to people, and it's really important to recognize outstanding work in the profession, and we really try to work hard to do that with these two programs. And I know the districts have their individual programs as well.
Well, and as Mark mentioned, go to the IMESD website for more information on how to nominate a teacher for that. And what is the state doing to oversee online and remote educational opportunities for students?
This is a hot one. Online learning is really becoming a growing demand by our customers. They want this isn't even the traditional homeschooling, although that has grown as well. We talked about the 35,000 missing kids. Many of them are in online programs. So there's been privatization, there's been public, it is not hard to get on your computer and find educational opportunities if a child wants to work remotely. What we've done at the ESD is, and we're the only ESD in the state to do this, and we're pretty proud of it, we have created a virtual learning academy, which is a K-12 program that provides all of the coursework but it goes through the districts. So if a student, rather than to go on another virtual academy, a virtual program that's out of Pennsylvania or another Oregon district that's not in our area, what this is you can have a full curriculum with teachers at your school, whether you go to school in Pilot Rock, whether you go to school in Pendleton, whether you go to school in Echo, Athena, and it's the backbone is through the ESD. So the key to this is the funding component. The districts retain the funding for that student. There's no secret why these online programs have popped up. They are profitable, and it's a way to go by profit and make money. We're not doing that. We're trying to do it as respond to what the customer wants, but yet keep the kids, quote, in-house in their district. And then what that creates then are hybrid schedules. So students may want to have choir. They may want to run cross country. They may want to play football. They may want band. They may want that civics class. And another thing, it's given an opportunity to expand the high school schedule for the smaller districts. So, for instance, we had a district a couple years ago that couldn't offer Spanish, couldn't find a Spanish teacher. They now have that availability through the ESD for that class, and then they can fill that seventh period. So it's been a complete win-win. We're really proud of the program. Originally, during COVID, we had around 700. We hope those numbers would go down because we want them back. We want them back in person as much as we can. I think we're holding around 400, 450 for that. But we're proud of that. It's going well. It's responding to the customer. Now, your question was, how's the state going to monitor? The state needs to monitor this because what is happening is, per student is about $11,000, give or take. These online, it doesn't cost $11,000 to educate a student virtually. It does in a brick and mortar. It doesn't virtually. So why, one would have to ask, why are all these things, are these programs and academies popping up? They're for profit, and the state needs to monitor that. I'm not questioning whether it's good, bad, or whatever, but there is a pretty heavy financial component to this, and we as a region have responded to address it, quote, build a better mousetrap. But online learning has to be regulated much more than it has been. And it's a fascinating topic because there's strong support for distance learning on both ends of the political spectrum for different reasons, but there's strong support. But we need to regulate it. We need to have a base on, okay, if we're going to move money around with the kids, great, the money follows the kids. The question is, what is the actual cost? And Oregon has never confronted that, and we need to.
I'm talking this morning with Mark Mulvihill, Superintendent, Intermountain ESD. Quick break, back with more after this.
Listen to the Coffee Hour any day, anytime. Find podcasts of past shows at mycolumbiabasin.com.
These high gas prices are affecting all of us. Letter Bus Transit is trying to help reduce your fuel bills by having bus routes run 11 times per day to over 20 bus stops conveniently located throughout the city. You can even save going to the grocery store because they have stop at Walmart every 50 minutes. Their handy mobile app lets you track your bus in real time so you don't waste time. So start saving money today in Letter Bus. For more information, go to the City of Pendleton website.
Now that cold weather is here, Burns Mortuary of Pendleton would like to remind you to check on elderly loved ones, friends, and neighbors. A visit and a warm drink can go a long way in making sure they are okay in these chilly days. This friendly winter reminder is brought to you by Burns Mortuary of Pendleton, helping families cope with the loss of a loved one for over 90 years.
Planning, looking ahead, it's a good practice. Michael Stratton with Stratton Insurance discusses why people buy life insurance.
There's dozens of reasons to buy life insurance, but when you boil everything down, typically people purchase life insurance because they owe it to someone or because they love someone. Life insurance has evolved, it's changed, it's become more expansive and actually less expensive over time. The products that we have available today are more efficient and they do more for you. It's no longer death insurance, it really truly is life insurance. If you get sick, sick, get hurt, have something debilitative happen to you, and you can't perform two of the six daily tasks of living, you can receive a portion or a majority of your death benefit while you're living. Spend it any way as you see fit.
Let's sit down together today and see how life insurance can benefit your family. Stratton Insurance, one responsible source. Follow us on Facebook, see us in Pendleton, Hermiston, LeGrand, The Dalles, and online at stratton-insurance.com.
Pendleton Original. It's the KUMA Coffee Hour. And now back to your host on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
Back this morning with Intermountain TSD Superintendent Mark Mulvihill. And Mark, it's a new year with new leaders in the Oregon Legislature. What are you watching out for in Salem?
Well, the old phrase, Dan, you're never safe when they're in session. So we are obviously watching. But yeah, it's fundamental change. I mean, historic. And this is my 35th year in the business. And in my job, I'm pretty involved in Salem. I've never seen this kind of turnover. So, of course, we have a new governor with Governor Tina Kotek. But we also have a new House leader because she's gone. We also have a Senate chair. And Peter Courtney, who is one of the longest Senate chairs in United States history at a state level, retired. And so... And one third of the legislature is new. And they're trying to do this while they're remodeling the Capitol with the seismic upgrades. It's going to be wild. And so what's interesting for us is our old networks and our communication systems are changing. Even Colt Gill is retiring at the end of the year. Lindsey Capps was an ed advisor. You know, these are friends of mine, colleagues of mine for many, many years, and they're all moving on. So now the challenge is establishing new relationships. Who are the new hires? Who are the new people? What is the direction governor wants to take? What's the direction the House wants to take? And we're trying to do this quickly, and their accessibility is difficult because of the building. But, you know, we just got through COVID, so we're kind of used to that. So I think that from the education standpoint, we're obviously concerned about the state school fund. Our costs have gone up significantly with inflation. We're looking at, you know, a state school fund number of $10.3 billion is where we are lobbying for. We're also lobbying for the maintenance of all of the other targeted funding, such as the Student Success Act. That's through the corporate activities tax, the high school success. I'm throwing a lot of ed jargon at you. Long story short, we are really pushing toward full funding for our kids because of the academic loss that we just discussed, as well and the challenges and increased costs. And so the money... last couple shows, I kept telling you, I don't know where all this is coming from, but the funding was really, really good in Oregon during all of this. Now it's drying up quickly. Now we have money, we have record reserves in the education. So you can kind of think about it this way. Money came in over the last couple of years and we put it in bank accounts. And there's three of them for schools. And so the question is, now we don't have a whole lot of revenue coming in like it was. I think the next forecast will show you we're playing on the edge of a recession, maybe a soft landing, we're hoping. But the revenue is not flooding in like it was. So now you've got your bank accounts full. The question is, during this biennium, how much do you drain those down? That's where we're at this session is. We're advocating we need the money because we got the kids and we need those to come down quite a bit. And the legislature's saying, what's the happy medium here? We're not going to empty them. And we're going to have to come in with a number that works. And so it's politics. It's a democracy. That's what we're... And so we won't know where we will be till probably around June, third week of June.
And you mentioned ODE's Director Coke Gill retiring at the end of the legislature session. What suggestions do you have for Governor Kotek as she seeks a replacement?
I would hope that she seeks a replacement from someone who we don't need change just for change. And, you know, Oregon has gotten beaten up pretty it's been very political on, quote, how our schools are performing that aren't completely accurate. I believe it needs somebody who's pretty pragmatic, that can kind of walk in the middle and join. You know, the governor has talked about how she's going to make an effort to bring the two, you know, rural Oregon and the valley together. And her picks for these various assignments are going to really see whether or not that's accurate. In conversations I've had with people, quote, in the know, she's really going out and is sincere to do that. So obviously Tina Kotek was not the pick in Eastern Oregon, okay, when you look at the polling. But she is sincere, I believe, in trying to pull the state together. She's the governor for Oregon. She's not just the governor for Multnomah County, and she wants to do that. So her choices for these positions are pretty critical on in the education world. Are we going to have a collaborator and a joiner that brings it together that supports teachers and kids? We don't need, I guess what I'm saying, aggressive change as much as that's a political, in my opinion. What we need is steady support. We had good momentum before the pandemic. We now, you know, as we started the show, have kids with a lot of needs. We have quality people in the schools that are trying awfully hard to deal with all this. They need support. They need proper funding. We need proper support from the Department of Ed. I do believe there are some accountability things that can improve for low-performing districts. You know, there are times Oregon has a way of throwing a wide net across if a District B is not performing or District B has issues with their board or superintendent, we all kind of pay that price. I kind of use the joke we all get, and we all have to stay in for recess because of one knucklehead. And so that's kind of where I'm at is I hope it's a joiner, it's a collaborator, it's a person that understands Oregon, how we tick, how we're set up, and is going to throw full support at the people doing the work every single day.
Governor Kotek has already named a team of education advisors. Do you know them, and what do you think of them?
Yeah, I know them. Yeah, this is a small state, you know. You know, Dan, I always joke, and I don't know if you've ever done this, but in Eastern Oregon, if you drive around with somebody, a new friend, it's kind of, by the time you get to Portland, you usually figure out a way you're related. Just all jokes aside with that, I think that the education advisors she has chosen so far and the people she surround are Oregonians. They are ones with diverse backgrounds. I think that the replacement for Colt is the big decision. Okay, that's the big one that's going to happen this spring. Colt's going to finish the year, and so that's the big one. The ed advisors really are more political liaisons. Yes, I know them. Good people, like them. They definitely would fit the mode of wanting to join and wanting to reach out. But the big pick is the one coming.
This is School Board Recognition Month. Talk about IMESD's board and the job they do for the children in all the counties you serve.
You know, we just finished our board recognition. We had our meeting last week in Hermiston. And our board, I call them. Now, you gave me a chance to brag here on them. And this is probably accurate for the majority of our school boards in the region. I would say this could go across for all of them. We have an all-star board. We have over 100 years of K-12 board experience in those seven people. They're very committed to the work of the ESD. They're very committed to kids, and they love it. They love our innovation. They love our programs, like we talked about the virtual learning. They love what we do for schools, and they're great people. They represent the four counties that they serve, but when they come to the meeting, they don't represent, I think, like a Joe McGilligott from Ione. He comes in, and he's not just representing Ione. He's representing North Powder as well, and they're just, I'm so blessed to work with them. And the school boards I work with, for all of them, I'm blessed. These are really good people that are giving back. It's the ultimate community service to be a board member.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you coming in this morning, talking this morning with Mark Mulvihill, Intermountain ESD Superintendent. And Mark, we'll talk to you again next time.
Thank you, Dan.
All right. Thank you. And that's going to do it for this edition of the KUMA Coffee Hour. We'll be back again tomorrow. Have a great day.
Depend on us for local news, sports, and weather. News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA, Pendleton.